Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Al Jazeera targeted Benjamin Netanyahu says the network will no longer broadcast from Israel because it threatens national security. The channel says that's inflammatory slander. What's really behind the ban and what does it mean for Israel's war on Gaza? I am Hashim Ahlbara and you're listening to the Inside Story podcast where we dissect, analyze and help define major global stories. Obviously, this is a story about our fundamental interest here on Al Jazeera, but with our distinguished panel, we're aiming to put it in the context of global human rights, the humanitarian imperative and geopolitics in a time of war. In Dhaka is Irene Khan, the UN Special Rapporteur on the right to freedom of opinion and expression. Here in Doha is Mansour Shuman, a Palestinian aid activist and citizen journalist who survived 5 months of war in Gaza. And in London, Daniel Levy is the president of the US Middle East Project and a former peace negotiator who is following the war closely. Welcome to the program. Irene, let me start by asking you about your reaction to the Israeli law aiming to ban Al Jazeera network.
Well, I'm alarmed. I'm alarmed because banning an international reputable media outlet in the middle of war, as you say, without any obvious explanation, is, in my words, censorship, blatant censorship, and therefore a violation of freedom of expression, but also, I think, broadly, of access to information.
Okay, Mansour, you've been in Gaza until recently. How important is Al Jazeera's coverage to the people there?
Al Jazeera has been with us for many decades now. My generation and the generation before me and after me, part of our culture, Al Jazeera is ingrained in it. It basically helped model our culture, our way of thinking, how we looked to the outside world. It also molded the vision of the outside world towards what's happening in the Arab, in the Muslim world, and especially in Gaza and Palestine. And right now, while I was in Gaza, Al Jazeera was the main outlet for the people in Gaza to listen to the news, especially through the different radio frequencies that were given to the civilians that didn't have access to either television or the internet. Mm-hmm. So right now, hearing about this news definitely, I think, will hurt the people on the ground in Gaza, especially those wanting to get their voices out. However, I am sure that, the ingenuity of the people of Gaza, together with Al Jazeera's team on the ground, will always find a solution to tell the story, how it is from Gaza and other places around the world.
Daniel, the geopolitical context is very important. The law is now in Netanyahu's hand to use. Why is he targeting Al Jazeera now, do you think?
Well, I would suggest that four things are going on. And, of course, you do sometimes see certain Western media banned in some countries, the West itself banning media, for instance, from Russian media outlets. But I think what's going on right here is, first of all, this is part of the attempt to control message, part of the Israeli disinformation campaign, part of the fact that you don't have many media outlets in Gaza, certainly not broadcasting 24/7. Most Western outlets have embedded themselves in Israel. It's not the first time Israel has tried to control the message in this way, bombing the Al Jalaa media tower in Gaza 3 years ago, killing Shireen Abu Akleh. 2 years ago, more than 100 journalists, the family of Wael Dakhtour, killed. This is another step in that direction. Secondly, I think it is a regional and geopolitical attempt by Prime Minister Netanyahu to go after Qatar, not just Al Jazeera. Mm-hmm. And the attempt here is to, if you remember, when Qatar was blockaded, those countries talked about Al Jazeera as one of the reasons for that. And I think it's Netanyahu's effort to say, hey, Al Jazeera is our common enemy. I don't think that resonates really today. Al Jazeera and the Qatar position is part of more of an Arab consensus. It's not an outlier. In that context, I also don't think we can ignore that this is happening, just as Qatar is playing a crucial mediating role in negotiations for a ceasefire and a hostage release. Netanyahu has done everything to undermine those talks, bombing the Qatar Gaza reconstruction building, all the rhetorical attacks mm-hmm. on Qatar. He doesn't want this deal. And finally, I would say it's part of his domestic political management. It's part of feeding the extremism in Israel. He has looked for distractions from a war that is not going well. The Israeli public tend to not be shown the images coming out of Gaza. And when this came to a vote in the Knesset, only 10 members voted against. No Zionist member of Knesset voted against. Only the 10 members from the parties representing the Palestinian Arab citizens of Israel. But the human rights community, the Association for Civil Rights in Israel, turned around mm-hmm. and said, this is dangerous. This is an attack on freedom of speech and expression.
Irene, this law follows a pattern where Al Jazeera has been targeted with threats, its journalists, teams, families killed. Now it's the next step, which is basically trying to silence Al Jazeera. What does the international law say about this?
Well, what is very clear here are that journalists are civilians under international humanitarian law. And in Gaza, the number of journalists that have been killed breaks all previous records of conflicts in the last 30 years. It indicates the use of disproportionate, indiscriminate attacks, which, of course, then catch journalists in that fighting. We've also seen some evidence, some suspicion that some journalists, particularly Al Jazeera journalists, have been targeted. And that indicates, of course, a war crime. You cannot target civilians in the middle of war. And then now comes an escalation. And this escalation is, of course, the shutting down of Al Jazeera, an independent media outlet, the only one operating, international outlet operating out of Gaza. So under international law, we see violations, potential violations amounting to war crimes. We see violations of international humanitarian law on freedom of expression, which does not disappear during conflict. People still have the right to access information that is gone. So I see a pattern here, from not just from the geopolitical perspective, but from the human rights perspective, a sliding, a backsliding of democratic values, principles, and laws in Israel. This is what dictators do. The first thing they do when they want mm-hmm. to grab power is shut down the media, shut down independent media.
Mansour, you and your neighbors and the people you know in Gaza, when you were there watching the media coverage, we have to remind our viewers there are just very few media outlets operating in Gaza. How crucial was that coverage in shaping your perception to what is happening on the ground and how significant it is beyond?
It's extremely important. I mean, Al Jazeera gave a voice to those that didn't have a voice. You have to also remember that inside Israel, there's a very big Arab-Palestinian population who did not leave their homes in 1948 and 1967, who rely on Al Jazeera, and who we have many relatives there that need Al Jazeera to ensure that their stories are being told. The people in Gaza, like I said, all the time, they are on their radios listening to Al Jazeera and their coverage from inside their occupied lands and what is happening in the West Bank and in Gaza. Al Jazeera is extremely, extremely important, again, when it comes to shifting the mentality of not only the inside world in the Muslim or Arab world, but internationally. I think it ranks there in the top one, two or three TV broadcast stations. So right now, the most heated place, the place that is changing history right now, is the occupied land in Palestine. And attempting another time to try and ban Al Jazeera there is just another facade. It's another way to show that the democratic nation of the Zionist state and its case for them supporting human rights mm-hmm. and freedom of speech, again, is another lie and is going to continue to work against them as they try to propagate their lies towards the world.
Daniel, you've spoken about the key four reasons why Netanyahu is taking that path. Now, When you say that you are the only democracy in that part of the world, and then you decide to shut down a news outlet when you know that it is absolutely going to be extremely difficult for you to build bridges with allies globally about this move, is he confident or emboldened in a way or another that the international reaction is going to be muted? Business as usual, move forward, nobody cares.
That's the key thing, isn't it? Because without that Western American guaranteed impunity, not only this measure against Al Jazeera, but, you know, let's go broader. Could Israel be doing what it's doing in Gaza? 30,000 plus deaths, perhaps many, many more, over 12, 13,000 children, the devastation, the use of starvation as a weapon of war, the plausible committing of the crime of genocide, ignoring the calls of the International Court of Justice, on top, of course, of decades of belligerent illegal occupation and a regime now documented and discussed not only in the human rights, but by states themselves in the courts as a regime of apartheid. Could any of that, let alone this latest measure, be possible if it were not for the absolute absence of accountability guaranteed by the US? And I think when Netanyahu took this measure, he did so confident that the State Department spokesman may appear in front of the podium and say, well, we worry about democracy and the role of the media, but they will not do anything. We've just heard of yet more arms transfers from the US to Israel. And this is a crucial point, Hashim. We saw months of demonstrations in Israel prior to October 7th of people saying, save Israeli democracy, the judicial reforms, what the Netanyahu Smotrich-Ben-Gvir coalition were doing. But they never talked about the occupation. They never talked about this apartheid regime. And here we have it. Not one Zionist member of Knesset raised their hand against this bill, which is an assault on freedom of expression, freedom of the media, and democracy. So at home, unfortunately, democracy does not extend to the protection of Palestinian rights.
Irene, 90 journalists killed in the war in Gaza. International journalists barred from entering Gaza. They have to be embedded with the Israeli army if they want to cover the story there. A wave of attacks, reprisals, criminalizations, sanctions, threats, intimidation, discrimination against the journalists. Yet you would assume that the international community, the UN and the Americans in particular, will be telling Netanyahu, enough is enough. It's not happening.
Well, I cannot say what, of course, the United States or any other member state will tell Mr. Netanyahu, but I can tell you from the human rights machinery, I'm an independent expert appointed by governments, by the members of the UN. We will be making very loud noise that we believe what is happening is not only the deprivation and violation of the right to freedom of expression of the inhabitants of Gaza, but also of the Israeli people. The Israeli people have a right to access diverse sources of information. That is part of freedom of expression. And Mr. Netanyahu and the Knesset are basically stifling. And that is how autocracy enters democratic. And that is extremely dangerous, I believe, for Israel as well as for the Palestinian territory. Very important. The international community and states, member states like the US, where, as you know, media freedom is a big issue. Countries like that must stand behind it, because otherwise, next we will know that BBC will be expelled from another conflict situation. So we have to be extremely careful as an international community what precedents are set here in Israel.
Mansour, you're an activist, citizen journalist. Give us an idea about the challenges that journalists would go through on a daily basis just to cover a simple story for their viewers domestically and globally.
Yes, while I was in Gaza, in both Ashifa and Nasser Hospital, like you said, I became a citizen journalist, reporting the news on different TV networks, radio stations, doing a lot of social media content on different platforms. And I interacted with dozens of journalists and social media influencers. They are all working in the most difficult and most dangerous areas, I think, in the world right now. There is no safe place in Gaza, And if you are holding in your hand any piece of technology, even if it is switched off, it can be tracked and you can be targeted. You have to understand that these journalists have families, have homes there, and many have lost their relatives, their loved ones, all their wealth. They've lost their residence. They're living in tents. They're living on the pavements. They're living inside ruined refugee schools and hospitals. In order to try to get an internet connection to get their media out, they have to have eSIMs, and they have to go through dangerous areas on different elevations and different remote locations in order to access a signal and try to get the message out, the video, the voice message, the text out to the world in a very dangerous situation. Many people, you know, every day whenever we met in the morning, we never knew if we would see each other at night, similar to what happened, for example, with the son of Wael al-Dahdouh, who we met in the morning, and we prayed our farewell prayers on him later during the evening, similar to many other journalists who lost family members on one day, and the next day they came back and said, look, whatever they throw at us, we're going to continue. This is our strive, our struggle towards freedom, not only for Palestine, but for the whole world.
Daniel, what is Netanyahu trying to achieve? It's no secret. He doesn't want to have any peace deal signed here in Doha. He's a big fan of having the announcement made elsewhere. Number two, he's been extremely critical of the Qataris over the last few months. And you get to this critical phase of the negotiations to salvage a deal about the hostages, and yet another warning to shut down Al Jazeera, which could compromise the safety of its employees. Is it a thinly veiled message to the Qataris once again that ultimately it has to be my way or no way?
I think it's not that thinly veiled, and we have a very consistent Israeli effort, not just against Qatar, against anyone who tries to be a contrarian voice to what Israel is doing. You see Israeli actions against South Africa. You see Israeli actions against others who take that stand. You see the efforts in the U.S. That Israel and its supporters, including some states from the region you are in, trying to cancel the arrangements with American universities who benefit greatly from the campuses they have in Qatar, like Texas A&M. So I think it's partly to send that message. I don't think that message will be effective or successful. I think Qatar is committed to this mediation effort. It has continued despite the other provocations on the Israeli side. And by the way, the Israeli Mossad chief continues to go back and forth, meeting with not only Qatari, but American and Egyptian mediators. And I imagine that will continue. Qatar, by the way, has met with the families of hostages in Qatari missions in different capitals in the world, had some members of the families in Doha. So I think Qatar will continue its efforts despite this. I think, yes, the Israelis may hope that the message will not come out as much as a consequence of this action. I think we just heard from a very powerful testimony from Mansour. And I think the truth will out, whether that's citizen journalism, whether that's the efforts that you at Al Jazeera will, I'm sure, maintain in terms of getting the story out. So I think when it comes to trying to hide from the world what is going on, that is not going to happen either. So I think this, I have to be blunt, is part of a quite unsophisticated and transparent game domestically and internationally that Netanyahu is playing. He's playing because he can get away with it.
Irene, since the start of the war in Gaza, the Israeli government has passed wartime regulations. And had it not been for the courageous, brave, sometimes lonely journalists operating on the ground, some of them holding a camera for the first time in their lives, had it not been for that courage, we would never have been able to see that relentless bombardment and the massive destruction in Gaza. Do you have any concerns that what we're seeing is just the same pattern, which is basically to deny the world from knowing exactly what is happening to the people in Gaza?
Yes, you might try to deny it, but I don't think they will succeed. You know, I'm working right now on a report on journalism in exile. And from that, I've seen around the world, it's the same story. Journalists will stand up. They will continue to do their work. Even citizen journalists will replace them if independent journalists are thrown out. So from that sense, the work will continue on the ground. The big question from my side is, what accountability will there be for Israel? And there, I think the international community has a duty to ensure that these kinds of breaches of international humanitarian law and international human rights law are indeed, and Israel is indeed held to account for those.
Mansour, is this something that is likely to deter the journalists operating in Gaza from continuing their work if they see the pattern of threats ongoing?
Not at all. It'll actually fuel them to even work further and be more strong and firm on their mission. I actually feel bad for the Israeli journalists, because I'm seeing that their country right now, its values are being demolished, and slowly, you know, they are internally crumbling. And honestly, once slowly the values that your country is supposedly built on start to eradicate, then you need to be scared about the future for you and the generations to come. So I think that the ball is in the court of the Israelis and the Israeli public opinion as well, and Israeli journalism. Do they want to see this the beginning of the crumble of so-called democracy in their society?
Daniel, if Netanyahu decides to go ahead and ban Al Jazeera, would it be a turning point, unprecedented move?
No, it's rather old, fair, really. You kill the messenger. That's the attempt here, quite literally, devastatingly in the case of Shireen and the family of Wael and many others. By a legal move here vis-a-vis Al Jazeera. But no, the message will come out. And if Israel doesn't want this kind of coverage, there's a much better path than passing these laws. Israel could cease to violate international law, could cease to commit crimes in Gaza, could cease to dehumanize and treat Palestinians in this way. And that's ultimately going to be the way out of this. Mansour makes a really important point that what this is also part of is a phenomenon inside Israel, where the media inside Israel has been censored, but it is also self-censored during these past 6 months to an unprecedented degree. And if anyone who understands the language spends some time watching Israeli media, it is a horror show, quite often of incitement to genocide. The International Court of Justice has called out.
I mean, if you look at the last few years, 2017, Israel vows to expel Al Jazeera's journalists. 2022, Shireen Abu Akleh is killed in an airstrike, kills the family of Wael Dahdouh. October 20th, 5th January, Wael Dahdouh's son and Hamza and another and the cameraman were killed. Is this a case for the ICC?
Certainly. And indeed, I understand that the International Criminal Court is looking into killings of journalists as part of its investigation. So certainly it's there. It's there, and it will, of course, take its course. But I also think I just want to pick up on a point that some others have made, and that is, what will this do to media inside Israel? A government, a parliament that passes a law without much thought of its own legal system and its own values, prime minister who decides to ban an outlet without much reason for political, geopolitical purposes, his own political manipulation. How much will they think next about what can be done inside Israel when criticism will arise, when diverse voices will sound? So this is actually is the beginning of a very worrying stage in Israel's political life, I think.
And no need to remind our viewers globally that it's the media that really makes massive impact and difference in this part of the world, and this explains why they have to stick around and continue doing what they've been doing. Irene Khan, Mansour Shuman, Daniel Levy, I really appreciate your insight and looking forward to talking to you in the near future. Thank you. This episode was produced by Mohammed Al-Aishi, Sarah Gill, Veronica Pedrosa and Jima Harris. To the sound was by Dragon. Vrankovic. The program was edited by George Joseph, Zainab Badr, and Jody Frias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. Thank you for listening. Tune in on Wednesday for our next edition.
Coming up on The Take, how Hong Kong protesters have been silenced and who's still speaking out. That's The Take by Al Jazeera. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.